Welcome to the Bifocal Podcast with John White and Jason Himmelstein, where we talk about business intelligence and the Microsoft stack with news, interviews, and expert opinions from around the space. This is episode 61, recorded on August 9th, 2018, where John and Jason talked to Lukasz Pawlowski, Senior Program Manager on the Power BI team at Microsoft, and mentioned the highlights from the August Power BI desktop release.
G'day, Jason.
Happy Thursday, John.
It is Thursday. One day away from Friday, close to what looks like a lovely weekend.
I'm sure it's going to be, but you know what it's also one day away from?
What's it away from?
A whole bunch of awesome announcements from Microsoft around Power BI.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday seems like it was a really big day. It was a big day for you and I because we've been waiting to be able to drop this interview with Lukasz Pawlowski for months now. And I got to go to Austin yesterday and speak at the Austin SPUG and demo some awesome new data sets. But I don't even want to get into that. We have so much stuff to talk about with this interview. Oh, and they dropped a new desktop yesterday too, John.
Oh, they did. They did drop a new desktop. Normally, we spend like all day talking about that.
We're just going to not do that. We're going to skip straight to an interview. But we do want to mention three things. There are three pieces that are worthy of note right up front. We're just going to mention them, and then we're going to dive into them in a future episode. We will come back and cover off the August desktop drop, but today, Lukasz's interview is so good. So we're just going to, three things. Number one, printing reports through exports PDF. Finally here.
And there was much rejoicing. I think that was the number two most requested item on User Voice. If it wasn't the number one, I can't remember right now. But at Summit, Will Thompson, who we had on the show last week, did a big reveal. Was it last week or the week before? Either way, did a big reveal and pulled the sheet off a printer sitting on stage and demonstrated this capability. So yeah, it's been much in demand and it's finally here. It's through a PDF, basically. It's an export to PDF. You get a PDF that can be printed. That's how it works.
I've used it three times this week. It's been great. It's really nice. Good stuff. But again, we're not going to dive into it. We're just going to move straight on. Want to mention that theming is generally available. I know you're a big fan of theming, John.
I'm a big fan of theming. Well, I like the idea of theming and I like using theming. Well, no, I don't like using theming. I like having theming. Let's put it that way.
And the third and last one we're going to mention today is there's a bunch of Q&A improvements. Q&A is now in Power BI Desktop and is generally available. We've been playing with it for a little while. It's there. And that's all we want to say about that.
And we've got a little bit of news on our end of the fence here, too.
We do. There was something that we did not say back on August 1st, because, we had a pretty jam-packed episode.
I hadn't heard about it yet.
Then you're just a bad coworker. But we want to say congratulations to Dean Swan from Unlimited Biz for his MVP award.
Yes, he's an MVP in Office Apps and Servers, just like we are.
Office Apps and Services.
Services. Oh, well.
That's okay.
It's been servers for so long.
That's okay. I will pick on Matt McDermott because last night at the Austin SPUG, he was convinced. He looked at my slide. He said, Jason, it's services and apps. I was like, it's really not.
I know apps comes first, yes.
Matt had to go out to the website to try and prove me wrong, and he went, damn it.
But yeah,
thanks for hosting me last night, Matt. It was a lot of fun.
Big congratulations to Dean. We're really proud of him here at Unlimited Viz and Tigraph. Absolutely.
And Dean, you do know, because I know you're listening, it's your turn to buy the first round. That's how it works at Summit. You buy the first round.
Damn right.
He's just going to expense it back to you, John.
That's true. I wasn't thinking that.
Yeah, that's okay. Anyway, bygones, let us dive right in. This is a great interview. This is a long interview. This is going to be a little bit of a longer show than normal, but this is gold. This is just some great stuff that Microsoft has put out there. You can go take a look at the show notes. You can find the blog post that Microsoft dropped yesterday, Enable Your Team with New Workspace Experiences. There's a bunch of great stuff in here. We're going to come back after the break, after we do the interview, and we're going to talk more, John. I'm going to cut you off right now. Let's roll right into the interview.
Let's do it.
Hey, we're on the Microsoft campus here at MVP Week, and we've got a special guest, Łukasz Pawlowski. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I almost got it right. I got it right.
I'm impressed. You can't pronounce my last name. We've been friends for like 10 years. I'm telling you.
I'm particularly thrilled to get Łukasz on the podcast, as I've been working with Łukasz with Power BI ever since the reboot. And we had our TIGraph content pack put into the service. So you got us through that. And it was something of a painful process.
Yeah, it was brand new. You guys were one of the first folks to create one of these things.
We were number 24 in the store, I think, which I thought was particularly good for a Canadian. We buy beer in 2-4s. So, you know, it's particularly appropriate. So, I'm not going to do it justice. So I'm going to get Łukasz to introduce himself to the audience.
Great. Hi, everyone. I'm Łukasz Pawłowski. I'm a program manager here on the Power BI team based out of Redmond. And I own a whole bunch of things in the Power BI service. I own apps and workspaces, permissions, sharing, collaboration. I also own Publish to Web. And as part of my alter ego, I do data journalism. So I'm also the engineering lead for the data journalism program for Microsoft, in supporting journalists using Power BI to tell the world about what's going on through data.
Cool. That's interesting. The data journalism thing. That's the first time I heard about it was this week when you mentioned that in our session. I wondered if you could just expound on that a little bit. It was, you showed, what was it, North Korean missile. That was built by David Elderfield.
That's right. Yeah. David built this fantastic report for a contest we ran, which was the 2017 Year in Review contest. And we wanted people to use some of the cool features that we've been adding in Power BI that help students tell stories. The drill-through capabilities, the conditional visibility stuff, bookmarking. And what we wanted to see what stories and what data sets were really meaningful. And we did that in the auspices of the Data Journalism Program, which is a program that helps newspapers and media publishers to tell stories using data in support of their regular reporting. So we've been working with a number of organizations, folks like the Associated Press. We've worked with Curbed, GeekWire, TechCrunch, a whole bunch to help them use data in more of their stories, using Power BI as the way in which they present that data to users. And we've actually been pretty successful in that. You know, we've done multiple live elections with the Associated Press. So if you saw the New Jersey or Virginia or the Alabama state elections, mm-hmm. right, those were supported with Power BI reports that were showing data. But also folks like King 5 News here in Seattle or WWL-TV down in New Orleans used Power BI reports with the Surface Hub to show interactive data as elections were progressing. And their reporters were standing live on air. And they were saying, hey, look, this county, the results just came in. Let's click on it and see who won that county. And that was all driven through Power BI reports.
Very cool. I did not realize that. I don't tend to watch much news around election time just because it just makes me sad. But, you know, in Texas, we kind of know who's going to win anyway. So you guys, when did you start with the data journalism program?
I think the data journalism program started about a year and a half ago or so. So we had a lot of interest after we did some pilot projects mm-hmm. with the King 5 folks here in Seattle. And we've just sort of moved that through. You know, we had in the French national election, France Télévision, which is the French national broadcaster, use Power BI on a Surface Hub on election night, right, for the presidential election, which is pretty crazy. If you are listening from Canada, you can go and take a look at their YouTube video, which is all in French, right? So it's actually pretty compelling. And that's just been germinating over time, and we've gotten more and more organizations. We're now participating in many, many events. In fact, there's a set of folks at the Investigative Reporters Conference that's happening this week. I'm going to be participating in a number of different events. And so with all that said, we had the contest and David Eldersveld made the winning entry. And it was all about North Korea and their progression in how their missiles have extended range over the course of the years and how over a series of different regimes in North Korea, they've accelerated their missile program. And it was all using Power BI visualizations and all the tips and tricks and techniques to go make it really compelling. And so he won himself a Surface Pro in that process.
Cool. Fantastic. It underscores another point, too, the data journalism program. When you can have reporters out there building data models and publishing, it speaks to the ease of use of the product. We are getting that democratization of BI that was the promise has been the promise for a long time. I mean, it was self-service BI, but it was self-service BI itself wasn't quite there, was it? I mean, it's that much more accessible now with Power BI, I find. It, a lot more people are we were talking to Charles Sterling a while back about community, and that a community is rising up around that. We haven't seen that around any BI product in the past.
Yeah, definitely. It's a sea change, I'd say. The kinds of folks that are picking up Power BI and running with it are very different from the kind of folks when I started my career in reporting services.
Oh, you came from that service.
Well, yeah. Okay. And so like when I started looking at reporting services, that was a different set of folks fundamentally. The reporting for them was their day job. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the folks now, data and analytics is a tool they use to be effective at their day job. Right. So if I think of one of the reporters we work with, Ronnie Mulla, who's over at Recode, which is based out of New York City, mm-hmm. her day job is producing 3 to 4 news stories every single day. And if data helps her tell stories, she's got this beautiful cord diagram that she updates. And what it shows the relationships between Silicon Valley startup companies and car manufacturers in the self-driving and automated driving space. And it's a tangled web. You know, everyone's working with everybody. Uh-huh. And a cord diagram expresses that in this sort of visceral way that no amount of text would ever cover. And just look at it once, you go, oh my goodness, there's a lot of people talking with each other there. And she uses that. She updates it every month. Whenever there's a new story, she updates the counts and who's in the cord diagram. And it just gets better and better and better over time. She's able to do that because Power BI is quite easy to use.
So all of this is really neat, and we have been watching the space quite a bit with we saw the data journalism stuff with the contest and everything. But we had an opportunity to be in your session at MVP Summit, and you talked about some really cool new stuff that you guys are looking at doing. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the things that you guys just are in the process of releasing and all of that?
Yeah, definitely. I think we've been doing a lot of work in the service part to make sure that our core business users, the non-technical folks, have a really easy and seamless experience. And we've also been doing a lot of work around administrators to make sure that the people governing all that also have the capabilities that they need. There's a number of capabilities that we've just recently produced. You know, everything from the ability to install apps automatically for end users so that a user goes to Power BI, they click on apps, and bam, all the data they need to get their job done is right there. And it's the official data, the one that's maintained by an actual IT team. It's not some random thing someone shared to them. And that's pretty cool, right? Huge response to that. We've been doing a lot of work with our organizations that are a little bit more complicated than just one AAD, right? So many organizations, they have most of their people in their core AAD, but many times they work with external partner organizations. They need to share content with their external partners. We did a whole bunch of work late last year around the B2B integration with Azure B2B so that you have a secure and principled way in which you can share content across organizations. And just literally right now, we are recording this on a specific day in Redmond. And about half an hour ago, a blog post went out that said that you can now share content from within your secure Power BI tenant to people with personal email accounts.
Oh, that got done.
That got done. And that literally just shipped out as I was having lunch. Now, which is actually pretty cool, because now what that means is that, you know, if you are a financial advisor, for example, and you work with a bunch of clients and they just have a Gmail account or they have an Outlook.com account, you can just share their analytics to them securely, make sure that they have access to the data they need, but only they can get it, which is pretty cool. And we're going to continue doing investments like that. Now, by the time you listen to this recording on a different day, there's going to be a whole bunch more that we're going to do in this space. And the biggest one that I think is going to be a huge thing for many organizations, especially organizations that use security groups to govern who has access to what content, mm-hmm. is we're introducing a new workspaces infrastructure. Today, when you use a workspace, it creates actually a Office 365 group And we got some feedback about that from large enterprises that, gosh, you know, that's cool that it's a group, but hey, it comes along with a mailbox and all these other things, SharePoint sites, et cetera, and so on. Mm-hmm. And it becomes sort of difficult to own and manage. And there's some challenges that happen between BI administrators and Office 365 administrators because of that. The new workspaces infrastructure removes that requirement to create an Office 365 group. So now what you can do with the preview that we've just released is you can create, it's an opt-in, a new kind of workspace that doesn't create an Office 365 group. It also comes with a couple of additional benefits that because it doesn't use an Office 365 group, you can add people to access that workspace through a security group or an email-enabled security group or a distribution group, or you can add an Office 365 group to that workspace.
That's an important thing. Being SharePoint guys and all, we like those groups.
That's right.
So, but I certainly get the point. Yeah.
And so you get the best of all worlds, right? And so what that means is that you're going to have a much more flexible way to assign access to content than you have in the past without some of the downsides that we've seen previously. And I think that's going to be a huge thing for organizations. Along with that, we're introducing a couple of new admin capabilities. So some of the settings that you would govern the creation of workspaces over in Office 365, we now have a property in the Power BI admin portal for doing that. We've also introduced a couple of APIs and some PowerShell scripts that you can use to go manage those workspaces as well. And those are, as it's a preview to start with, those will get filled out over time. Now, with the workspaces, what's going to happen is we've released it as a preview, and it's going to take us a few months to get it to what we call general availability or GA. And during that time, people can opt in, give it a shot, let us know if there's issues. And both the old workspaces, the ones tied to Office 365 groups, and the new workspaces will live side by side. At GA, what we'll do is we'll flip a bit, and new workspaces, when you create a new workspace, it'll be one of these ones with the new infrastructure. And the old workspaces that are tied to Office 365 group, they'll keep working. And a little bit later after that, we'll do a migration. We'll give you some tools to help you migrate while they're sitting side by side if you want to move more quickly, but we'll wait to see if there's any kind of issues that come up that are latent. And as we fix those, then later we'll go and close that out and migrate everyone to the new workspaces, preserving things like association between your workspace and the Office 365 group that it came from by using the security permissions, and also making sure that there's what we'll affectionately call the preferred OneDrive location so that you can easily find that content and pull it in.
Yeah, that's very, very cool.
You mentioned Power BI apps. Now, apps, that's something of an overloaded term in where I come from. I think for the benefit of the audience, they already know, but what is a Power BI app? In the UI, of course, you find it in different places. What is considered an actual Power BI?
Because we've run into the confusion of there's app workspaces, there are apps,
app workspace,
So this term seems to be something that, and we talk about this in the workshops that we do, and when we go out in the community and talk, because we get the question, what the heck, the apps, there's an app on my phone,
there's enterprise content packs in the app section.
Yeah, and app, so. There's app source, and it seems to be, do you want fries with that? Do you want, let's just have app on, it's the mustard. Here's, it's apps, why not? So we figured you were the man to ask about this, and if you can help us understand and help our audience understand what the heck that thing is.
Definitely, I can help share the perspective that I have. When I think about how users use data, there's really a lines around how people work together. And what I like to say is, when you have a team of people, these are people that work together. Let's say the three of us are in a team. We don't hide anything from each other, right? We want to have access to all of the content. If we do a one-off little report somewhere, we all want to go back to it because it was useful at that time. And by golly, my manager is going to ask me to refresh it 6 months from now. I better be able to go find it again. And we just work together. And typically we work in a workspace. And today in Power BI, it's called App Workspace. But you'll notice that we're going to change that name to be just a workspace.
We're doing the clapping going on here.
And the reason is that a workspace is a place where people collaborate. They put content so that they can work together on it. It can live beyond the life cycle of an individual in organization. And really, they work together on all of the details. And that's a workspace. And you can share things from within a workspace to all the people that need to review it and so forth. Now, in an organization, as an organization grows, I don't know what that inflection point is. Is it 50 people, 100 people? Certainly by the time you get to an organization the size of Microsoft, where there's tens of thousands of employees, there's suddenly a need to have enterprise, official, maintained, high-quality content that people can depend on every single day. And what happens is IT or specific champions within business groups need to publish out that content that everyone else can use, reuse, and depend on. And apps are the way in which they do that. They package authoritative, official content, and they make it easy for anyone, the broad mass of users in the organization who should have access to it, to be able to find it and use it. And apps then become the distribution mechanism to communicate official data to an organization. And notice the distinction that I made between a team and an organization.
Yep.
And so you can think of a sliding scale. At some point, it just becomes like the VP says, I just need the official one. You don't want to show your VP all of the details of what you're working. The VP might get confused.
Yep.
Might open the wrong copy. You might not update that copy because no one's paying attention to that copy. And suddenly you're getting asked, why isn't this up to date? When really, they're not looking at the one that you want. So at some point, you end up, teams end up building apps to communicate to their stakeholders the data they do want. It's almost like the contract of what they do want to maintain for that broad audience. And of course, teams work together with their stakeholders. So if there's a one-off, they'll just create something and just share it out with that person who needs that answer. So those are the two differences. And I think what you'll see as we go forward is you'll see us sort of look at collaboration.
Yeah.
Through, and you can think of that as workspaces plus sharing. And then you can think of distribution. I distribute official content, and that's through apps. And then you'll see us do something which I'll start calling composition, where I can compose from all of the data that I have access to. Access from official apps that someone's given me access to, dashboards people have shared to me, or stuff that I've created for my own or my team's purposes. I can create a composition. My own dashboards, my own reports that are meaningful to me or my team that help me individually get my work done as fast as I possibly can. And that composition will be supported through a unified permissions layer and a unified ability to request access. And you'll see us start building that kind of set of capabilities over the coming months. And so you'll see some of those things come along. But that's the difference between an app. And I think the other thing about apps is there's a lot of potential in apps. Mm. When I work with enterprises, yeah. I see people who make beautiful dashboards, intensely branded with gorgeous icons and wonderful fonts. And we see that. And I can't tell you exactly what we'll do in that space, but that's a cool thing to think about is how apps can evolve become even more gorgeous and more intuitive for everyone who's producing them so that they look really compelling as well as for everyone consuming them so that they understand this is really the authoritative content they're looking for.
That makes sense. It makes perfect sense. I love the model. I love the fact that you can just take a workspace and turn it into an app and like a cut of that workspace at that particular point in time, really. But you don't have to worry about replicating the data out there, which you have to, of course, in the enterprise content pack, right? Everybody's hydrating their own version of the content pack. It's getting a little bit toward, it's not ALM, but it's application lifecycle management. But we can continue to keep going in our workspace. And when we're ready, we'll say, okay, let's publish this out to the organization. But in the meantime, they can be using like a major and minor version, really.
That's really what it is. Yeah. And so what you'll find is that the official app, like let's say your financial quarter, there's an app for the financial quarter, but the reports for the next financial year might be evolving. Mm-hmm. And the IT team's working on those. They're not going to be published until that fiscal year ends and the next one starts. But they're ready. They've shared them out with the stakeholders. Everyone's reviewed everything. Everyone's ready to go. And then they update the app and bam, the whole organization has the new fiscal year reports. And it's a beautiful little model there.
As someone who has created both service content packs for my enterprise, as well as now I'm doing service apps, because that's the naming for these, can you talk a little bit about what the future, what that looks like going forward?
Is it going to be both, right? How do these all square?
It's a good question. And it's something that we've been thinking deeply about for a while now. And one thing that we've heard is as we introduced apps, people love them. They're so much easier to consume and understand for the non-technical users and even for the content publishers mm-hmm. that we want to continue to grow that. And actually, as we've done this new Workspaces announcement, at the same time, we've taken our first step towards unifying the concepts of apps and content packs. And the way that you can think about it is that apps will supplant content packs. And what we've done is in the new Workspaces environment, we've actually disabled organizational content packs and disabled service content packs. And what that does is it helps folks understand that going forward, apps are really the place to be. And we're going to invest in a number of capabilities that enable people to use apps in a much more similar way to some of the more advanced use cases of content packs without some of the drawbacks of content packs. Mm-hmm. As we know, like when you install a content pack, it sort of litters your workspace.
It's a great way of describing it. Yeah.
And it's confusing. Why do I have all this stuff? Do I need all 10 of these reports that are in this content pack? How do I clean them up? What if I install it twice? All these things are problems for normal business users.
Do I really have to update every single one of these data sources?
That's right. And so what we're going to do is we're going to give you more control over apps so that you'll be able to, if you wanted to, customize a particular report in an app in a principled way, you know, with security in mind, you'll be able to take a copy of the report. It'll still be tied to the underlying data set that's published and official in the app. And you can make your customizations. But when you go back to the app, you will see the official and up-to-date version that's in the app. No more of this, hey, the content pack author has updated the content pack. Would you like to update it? And suddenly you got 10 more reports in your workspace, right? So it's going to be a lot more flexible for business users and much, much easier to understand and much more governed from the viewpoint of the people creating the content. And so the way this is going to work is for the new Workspaces infrastructure, the organizational content packs and service content packs will no longer exist. In the old infrastructure for Workspaces that are tied to Office 365 groups, you can still use them as normal. With one major change is that we've changed the Get Data UI to focus on apps.
Good.
And so when a user goes in, no matter where they go in Workspaces in Power BI, they click on Get Data, the first two buckets they see will actually take them to the organizational apps and the service apps mm-hmm. that are available to them. For the old Workspaces, there'll be a button at the bottom of the screen that lets them go find the content packs if they still have them. And then in the new Workspaces, you just won't have those options to get the organizational content packs and service content packs. Cool. So it'll be a very natural kind of change and will sort of emphasize the future. And then once we migrate away from the old Workspaces infrastructure, those organizational content packs and service content packs will cease to be a thing in Power BI. You'll have tools for copying content between Workspaces and taking references to data sets across Workspaces and things that people are abusing content pack infrastructure for.
Yeah. Mm.
So you'll have a much more intuitive and natural way to do those activities. You've depended on content packs on simply because there was no other way to do it.
Right.
And so we're really listening to all that feedback and trying to take things forward in a logical kind of way, making apps the one way in which you distribute content to an organization.
That's very cool.
It's kind of interesting. It's occurring to me that we're talking about the legacy parts of a 2.5-year-old service. And it really does speak to the velocity of how quickly this has evolved and how response of the organization is to customer needs. I think it's a real
It's definitely positive. A cool thing that we hear from people in the community. They're drowning from the fire hose a lot of times, but they're so excited about it because you guys are doing iterative updates and better things. And the way that you're sunsetting certain capabilities is being done in a thoughtful way. And so that's something we hear in the community. So now is my opportunity because we're here with you, and it's not very often that we actually get to be in person. We get to be on some calls with you periodically, and as MVPs, we get that opportunity. But one-on-one, we don't get this opportunity very often. So I have a couple of asks.
I'm getting excited, I know.
I'm pulling back from the microphone.
It's okay. I'll calm down, I promise. I'm hearing all of these awesome things, and my brain is flooding with all the things that I want in addition to all the really great stuff that you've talked about and the stuff that we saw here at Summit and really exciting stuff. I'm hearing about apps and the new ability to update. That's really powerful of just being able to go in. I found a problem. I can just go update it, or I want to add new reports. I'm going to publish an update. I'd love the ability to be able to go in and as I'm updating an app, be able to have an author's notes so that people who are coming and consuming that, hey, there's something new. There's a star next to it. Hey, it's a new version of the app. I'm going to go take a look at the release notes. And because you talked about beautiful reports, John has his soapbox that he'll get to in a second about it. But I'd love to be able to have, for Rackspace, a corporate theme, because that's an important thing. When you go show business owners and the like, you want consistency across and to be able to have true, like a corporate custom theme that I can just go click on and it's always there as an option for me. That would be an amazing thing. And I know that you love the theming concept as well.
The theme concept, the way it's implemented, my ask, of course, is I want a theme editor that's not just editing JSON files. I know, we all love JSON.
Yes, they're my files. What can I do?
But the way it's implemented right now is not for the faint of heart. So I'd love to see something like that.
Yeah, so please, we love the direct feedback mechanism with you, because we get the ability to come and tell you these things, but our listeners don't. So it'd be really cool. Like, how do people get in touch with you? How do we get them the ability to give you feedback on these things? Because they're as rabid sometimes as I am about how passionate they are about the things they want.
Absolutely. And one of the things that's been transformational for me in my role is we have this phenomenal place. It's ideas.powerbi.com, where anyone in the world can submit an idea and get their friends to vote on it. And as people vote and interact with these ideas, we see them. And I'll tell you, we look at them every single day, every week, every planning cycle. We say, what are the top ideas? What are the trending ones? Which ones are really interesting? Which ones are easy? We generate a whole bunch of quick wins every month, right? And we go and say, hey, can we do that quickly? Can we do it? Well, how many folks would be, excited by that? One of the things that's amazing for me is that I personally go out there and I close features. And every time I send an email, when it goes up to 3,000, 4,000 people who voted on something, mm-hmm. I personally get a high. Nice. Because I know that there's a bunch of people who are going to wake up somewhere in the world with an email saying, your life just got better. And it's because they told us what they wanted. So
it does have that effect. As the recipient of several of those emails, mm-hmm. it's like, yes, you get a little joy on the other end.
And it's amazing. It's something you can show your boss, right? If you made the decision that to buy Power BI or bring it into your organization, you can just send those emails saying, hey, they listened to us. And that's very compelling. So whether it's theme editors or help notes, or change tracking for apps, I know that I've heard things from enterprises that say, hey, I'd like to put my support email address into an app, right? So that when there's a problem, the user calls me instead of Microsoft support line. Wow, all those things, I'll tell you, I've been compiling my list of what I've heard in the apps area, and we'll be, once we get through a couple of these other things that we've been working on, we're going to crank on a whole bunch of these things. So get your asks into ideas.powerbi.com. Find an MVP to amplify it. I hear there are two very wonderful MVPs who are interested in hearing your feedback. They can send us email also. But be active in the community. Ask us questions. Engage with us. Ask us. Watch our blog, thepowerbi.com/blog. You'll get updates every week. Multiple things are shipping. Write something in the comments. We watch those. We respond. That's one of the things that's amazing about how we work today. Fundamentally different from how when I started my career, I'm able to ship a feature a few weeks after it's implemented, independent of every other big thing that's going on. So if I have something that's going to drive value and it's going to make people happy, I can do that. And I'm more than happy to take requests.
That is mind-boggling. Awesome. You can do it in a couple of weeks. That is just so comparatively over a year. That is just awesome. So, Lukasz, thanks so much for taking the time. This has been awesome getting to talk with you. And we look forward to being able to get this out there when everything drops. And, you know, this has been a great week. Thank you. You've been a big part of that for us. So thank you very much.
And it's always a pleasure to talk to a fellow Canadian.
Absolutely. Go Canada.
Yes.
And with that, we will go ahead and end. So take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was interesting.
Wasn't it, though?
I'm telling you. Yeah, I want to point out that interview with Lukasz was recorded during MVP Summit, which was done on March the 8th. Yeah. So for the past 5 months, they have been holding on to this, trying to finish it, button it up, which generally means that they've got it right.
Yep.
Because, man, they've been working on it, and this is going to be good stuff. A couple of things to note. The blog post was published on August the 7th, yep. Very late, but still on August the 7th. Doesn't actually give the time, but it was well after most business hours because we've been watching this. And then the public preview has started rolling out this week and will be enabled for all users by Saturday, August 11th, 2018. So that's right there at the very top of the blog post that they've been working on this, and it's coming out in preview. Again, this is a preview. By the time this episode drops, everybody should have this.
Yeah, and if you remember, we talked about two major things in there, right? We talked about the fact that workspaces are now decoupled from Office 365 Group. Good and bad, if you're relying on Office, if you expect that group behavior, expect to see a workspace every time you create a group, that won't necessarily happen. You're going to take some additional action to make that happen. But there are an awful lot of benefits that go along with taking this approach. That's there. But down near the bottom of that post, and what we talked about in the interview, let's not forget about that deprecation of content packs. And if you turn on this preview, you won't be able to create service-based content pack reports any longer.
Well, damn it, John, then what are we going to do?
Well, we're not necessarily going to turn the preview on. Or we can flip back. They're going to be replacing these, obviously, over time with apps. The details around that remains to be seen. But just be aware of that. If you turn on the preview, you're going to lose the ability to create new content packs in your workspaces.
Now, honestly, I personally am in favor of this.
So am I.
This is the right choice. My feigned exasperation there aside, this is the right choice. Mm-hmm. Going to apps is a much better model. It's the apps model is one that can be updated and pushed out, have changes pushed out. The content packs was not. Once you had it, nobody could do anything to it. You had to go and rehydrate a content pack, get the new version. That was ugly. I really like the apps experience much better. I think this is the right choice. The other thing to note in the blog post, the very bottom of the blog post below that deprecation statement of the removal of content packs is limitations and changes. There are some limitations and changes here. They outlined them of what's available now, what will be available at general availability, and what's not actually been planned yet as well. So definitely good stuff to go off and read the details behind this. Interview's great because Lukasz tells you in his own words why this stuff's important, what it's all about. I'm really glad that we were able to finally get this published. Thank you to Lukasz for sitting down with us and doing that. This is great stuff. Now you all know what we've been holding on to since March and what we've been hinting at and dropping, hoping that every month we'd be able to publish. This was it. It's awesome stuff.
All right. So yeah, I think that's we've probably prattled on enough. We should let people get back to their day and come back next week with some more stuff.
Sounds like a good plan, man. And I will see you in 2 weeks in Seattle.
You will.
By the time this drops, it's only going to be a week.
That's accurate. If you're in the Seattle area, come see us. We got lots of good stuff, lots of new stuff in our day-long session, our tutorial, and we've both got a number of sessions throughout the week.
Yeah, man. All right. I will talk to you soon, bud.
Take it easy. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bifocal Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to us on SoundCloud, iTunes, or via your favorite podcast app. You can follow us on Twitter at Bifocal Show. The show notes for this and all of the Bifocal podcasts can be found on the Bifocal.show blog. The music for the Bifocal Podcast is Indie Rock by Scott Holmes and is shared under Creative Commons.